This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly sponsored by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. As a City supporter, we know you value delivery, and McDelivery is up there with the very best. You'll always be winning with McDelivery because just like Kevin De Bruyne, McDelivery puts your order right on a plate. So the only thing left to say is, are you in? Order now on the McDonald's app, and you can also get rewards points delivered as well. So that ordering today means some tasty rewards for you tomorrow. Only via the app at participating restaurants, 18 plus, rewards registration required, points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
What is that? Sweet, I've not actually wrote this introduction down, so it might take a bit of a, might take a while. Let's see if we can do it in one. Record rain in Dubai, horses running through the streets of London and Kyle Walker getting assists. God, the end of the world must be near. It's Friday the 26th of April. I'm Amos Murphy.
I'm Ollie Kirsch.
I'm Alex Michelle.
I'm babysitting, it seems. And this is the City Report podcast.
It's here for Gundogan.
Welcome back to the City Report podcast. Got two juvenile children in front of me. It must be Friday. Someone's had the sweets. Too tired for this shit. Alex, welcome back for now.
Oh, yeah. We'll see how long it lasts, but I'm here for now and excited to be here, ready to crack into this and get into everything that we saw there.
Yeah, there were certainly things we saw there. Oliver, welcome back.
Hello.
Hello?
What do you want from me?
Oh, I'm not dealing with this today.
Hello, Amos. Hello, there, Alex. It's nice to be here after a 4-0 win, isn't it?
It is. Should we get into it then? Some hopefully serious football chat. Let's go then. Manchester City 4, Brighton 0. City keeping the pressure on Arsenal. It's weird, isn't it, Alex? Because City are in this weird position where... I mean, it's a phrase I've taken from the second sport in my life, cricket, but scoreboard pressure, which essentially means, okay, granted, one team might be in a better position, but the team with the points on the board are, for all intents and purposes, ahead at the moment. And that's kind of where we find ourselves, isn't it? City obviously closed that gap. Fantastic performance. We'll get into it. But what are your vibes after that? Because it felt like a game City had to win. They won it. Back to sort of the status quo, I guess. One game in hand for City, 1 point behind.
Yeah, I think there are a lot of sort of psychological effects at play when you have these things sort of alternating back and forth and the power is going from one hand to another seemingly. But at the end of the day, all City need to do is win the final six games, now five games, and that'll be it. And that was one out of six done so far. We're on to the final five, and I think this one was partially the trickiest. I'm sure we'll probably get into the talk of how we expect those remaining games to go at some point in the near future, if not in the remainder of this pod. But I do think that this little challenge here with the very quick turnaround between Real Madrid to the FA Cup to this game to now looking ahead to Sunday, the opposition here might not have been the most challenging, but just the circumstances proved a big challenge. And to have the game all but wrapped up within 30 minutes, there's not much more you can ask for there.
It pretty much went as well as City could have hoped for, I guess. Ollie, it felt like after last week. Last week was emotionally taxing, and I say that even from a sort of, well, supporter, someone who works in the sports industry, does this podcast, etc. I got to Sunday, and obviously we had the madness at Wembley with United and Coventry, but even I was a bit like, oof, right, okay, taking stock a little bit and, you know, looking at the fixture list, knowing City then had 6 Premier League games, 1 FA Cup final to come, and going, right, okay, it's time for a breather. And it almost felt like we're recording on the Thursday night. It's obviously going out on the Friday for UK listeners. But it almost felt like tonight was the start of a new mini season, in a sense. I don't know if that's sort of me compartmentalising it in a really bizarre way, or if you can sort of share that thought.
No, you're right. You're right. This is what clubs experience that don't go all the way in various competitions towards the end of the season, but still have something to play for in the league. And we're blessed in that that's an unusual and an unfamiliar feeling, really. You know, generally over the last few seasons, we have gone pretty damn deep in the Champions League, a final, a semi-final, another final. And the FA Cup, we've done better in the last couple of years than we did in Pep's first 3 or 4. I don't think we really made waves in the FA Cup. It was always the Carabao. Obviously, with that wrapped up in February, it's a different story. So this is maybe a feeling that we've not had for 3 years now, or 4 years, maybe the COVID season?
21-20. No, of course, that was semis as well.
19-20, I think it was.
Yeah, 19-20, but obviously City went in the title race then, were they? I guess you could probably say 18-19 is the last time City were out of the quarterfinals of the Champions League and still in a Premier League title race.
Either way, it's been a while since we got towards the back end of April, and it was basically a straight run down the back end of the Premier League season before we have to worry about anything else, that being the FA Cup. So it is an unfamiliar feeling. It is nice in a sense. Obviously, it's not nice in the sense of we are no longer in the Champions League, but it is nice because, as you say, now it's a bit of a mini season, and the players and the fans can lock in and just look solely at the Premier League games in front of us. The last week has felt weird, or not even the last week, the run-up to tonight's game has felt weird, because when you have in the space of 7 or 8 days, 3 different competitions, and 3 pretty big games in 3 different competitions, Champions League quarterfinal, FA Cup semi-final, Premier League 6th to last game of the season, it can't be easy for the players to make that mental switch. Whereas I think now we might see some benefit from the fact that Pep only has to plan for Premier League games. The players only have to prep for Premier League games. And psychologically, all they are looking at now is 34, 35, 36, 37 and 38. United, FA Cup final, worry about that later. I'm not particularly worried about that later, but we'll get onto that when we do our FA Cup preview in a few weeks' time. But
if we're still alive, if the end of the world hasn't swept us away, the horses and the rain in Dubai and whatever.
Yeah. Well, I mean, one world-ending event is practically guaranteed not to happen now, and that's Liverpool winning the Premier League title.
Well,
everyone, 1, 2, 3,
wee! Don't go too soon. Don't go too soon.
Look, it's unlikely. If it was just City and Liverpool in this position right now, or just City and Arsenal, just Liverpool and Arsenal, you'd be thinking, yeah, maybe Liverpool have still got half a chance. They could do something. But ultimately, they are now relying on 2 teams slipping up. And these, a few weeks ago, were the extra dynamics that we're talking about when we're looking at the Premier League's final 8 fixtures or 9 fixtures. With 3 teams in the mix, the dynamics completely change. Whoever blinks first is probably out, purely because you're now relying on 2 teams to fuck up and not 1. So it would be stupid of me to completely write them off, but it would also be stupid of me to put money on them winning it. If you know what I mean, it's pretty far-fetched for them now, and I would be quite impressed if they're still in there. So, yeah, we've got to look at it like that. City and Arsenal, 5 games to go, 4 for them. 4 for them, 5 for them, 5 for us. Five for us? Yeah. 4:35, 36, 37.
Four for them.
I'm actually counting
60.
On my hands here. Yeah. It's late at night here.
Is that a newfangled
maybe you are juvenile after all.
We'll get on to spelling next.
Yeah, well, so, no, look, that's what it is. We've got home straight now. We can see everything laid out in front of us. We know what we've got to do and when we've got to do it, and that's that.
Mm-hmm. Well, not quite a home straight because still three away games to come, but I take your point entirely. I think with Liverpool, to sort of just go off track a little bit, they're one of them teams you can never write out until it's mathematically possible to do so. And I did hypothesise, I think it was after they got beat by Crystal Palace, that it probably would become a two-horse race. Liverpool have sort of sustained themselves on momentum and momentum only for a good part of the season, so it's no surprise to see them falling away. It probably will end up being one of City or Arsenal first and Liverpool third. But Alex, we're 10 minutes into the show and we've barely even spoke about the game itself, and it does feel like one of those matches where, should City go on and win the Premier League title, they'll look back at this game and go, you know, it was just a box ticks. It's not going to be sort of remembered in 15 years' time for anything necessarily in particular, bar maybe that Kevin De Bruyne header. But a really composed, a really cool, a really structured, a really, I don't know, a little bit of arrogance about City play in the best sort of way as well. You know, they rocked up. Brighton had been ravaged by injuries, don't get me wrong, but they went there. And I think possibly for the first time in I'd say maybe the last 2, 3, 4 months, maybe even season, they sort of didn't really break stride, did they, City? And won the game comfortably.
Yeah, I think so. It was really refreshing to see, honestly. I think one of the things that has been tossed around a bit, and people dismiss it a lot for the right reasons, I think, but City have felt at their best in terms of watching them as a fan and just feeling like this is City football when we have been the most fluid this season. And that was once again on display in this one, because Julian Alvarez was out there as the 9 in replacement of Erling Haaland, who's injured at the moment. And yet he wasn't necessarily playing as a 9. He was drifting all about. It was him, Kevin De Bruyne, and Phil Foden in the middle as this sort of three-headed beast. And, you know, they would tuck in centrally together. You would have Vardy off the left sometimes. You would have Walker off the right sometimes. You would have this sort of box in one at the back, which we saw all the way back in the first game week of the Premier League season against Burnley, which is funny enough. And then it just works somehow. It just really comes together. And that sort of individual quality all sort of flows into one another. You have these amazing combinations that come out of it. And in the end, you are sort of relying on the individual quality of these players, such as that Kevin De Bruyne header, such as, okay, the deflection on the free kick for Phil Foden, okay, him taking advantage of a Brighton mistake. But at the end of the day, City have those players. It's not really a sort of hypothetical when you do have those players to capitalize on that. And I think there is a conversation to be had about how much Erling Haaland, you know, hurts City in terms of that, especially where the squad is at this season, because for me, in terms of this sort of structure versus fluidity dynamic that we're seeing at play, you know, he's on one end of that. And that was sort of left in some ways last season. And these performances where we get, you know, in most cases, an Erling Haaland-less Manchester City, that's where you really have, you know, the opportunities for the squad to sort of fully function in a way that at the moment, not necessarily next season, and certainly not last season, it's just individual case this season, doesn't necessarily happen when Erling Haaland's on the pitch. So yeah, it was just an incredible performance all around. Really, really sort of seemed easy, as you said. And, you know, Kevin De Bruyne and Phil Foden sharing the spotlight once again.
Yeah, I think it was a timely performance from the pair of them. So much talk about whether or not they can play together in Real Madrid. There was another game in there, I can't quite remember off the top of my head, where it just wasn't working. There was sort of too much going on. But given the personnel, given the setup, it worked for City tonight. And it's ironic because I reckon had Haaland been playing, he probably finishes the night with a hat-trick, given the way that Brighton had not only been sort of hampered by injuries and Jesus Christ, that line they were trying to play and playing out from the back. I mean, Brighton obviously didn't help themselves, did they, Ollie? But City were maybe not sensational, because to be sensational, you need an opponent who is giving you something. And Brighton, bar the odd attack here and there, didn't really give them anything. But it was just the way they went to Brighton and they nullified them, which is almost harking back to maybe a little bit of the treble winning campaign, especially this time of the running anyway.
Yeah, it was. I would never describe it as a rip-roaring performance or any of those over-the-top descriptors that we get, you know, going back to always the game I go back to, Madrid last season. It's none of those. But they were flawless. Everyone was flawless. Everyone was flawless in the sense that every player on that pitch did their role, all the way to Ederson, you know, thinking about the pre-assist over the top to Walker. Every player did what they were supposed to do. Every player did what they were supposed to do and did it to the best. A couple of maybe missed chances, Doku at the end, but look, it's very minor stuff to pick out on. Although if we do lose the league title on goal difference by one goal, I will be looking at that chance and a few more from some other players. But no, it was a pretty flawless performance. So the defence was solid. Ederson did his job and came up with that wonderful long ball to Walker. Kovacic was steady, kept things ticking in the middle of the field. De Bruyne did his bit. And by the way, that what a header.
That's unbelievable, madness, isn't it?
It curled. he curled the header like it had come off the side of his boot.
What was that mobile game where you could like imitate old...
Score Hero.
No.
I know which one you're thinking of. It was like Hero, Jumpers for Goalposts. No, yeah, but you're thinking of...
You've got it. I was thinking of Score Hero. You would get these balls that get crossed in and you could put the most outrageous whip on a sort of a header from 3 yards out and you could make it start outside the post and curl back in. It was a little bit like that. It was like he'd sort of got a pen out and just drawn his route to goal. It was madness.
Yeah, it was mega. And you know, Alvarez did his job beautifully. Foden did his job, obviously, you know, got 2 goals. The pressing for that second goal was fantastic. Was it the second goal or the third goal? Can't remember.
The third. The second was that horrific foul on Phil Foden. And the wonder strike from the free kick.
Yes. I wonder if he'll get that awarded to him, by the way. It could be an own goal. But either way, look, the pressing and the pressure for the third goal to force that mistake out of Brighton. It was just a very smooth, flawless performance. Not one player on that pitch did badly. Not one player on that pitch blew anyone away at the same time. It was just the machine was well-oiled tonight and or listeners last night and... everyone did what they were supposed to do and they did it very, very well.
It's quite nice, that, isn't it? Everyone doing what they're supposed to do and they're doing it quite well. Unlike you absolute fools at the start of this podcast when you had to...
That's getting left in, isn't it?
Absolutely. But yeah, that'll do for part one. Hopefully part two is a little bit more like City's performance, composed, cool and calm.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The Etihad Stadium really is wonderful at this time of the season. And the same goes for McDelivery. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com. Welcome back to the City Report Podcast, your home for daily Manchester City content. End of another week. It feels weird doing one of these reviews on a Friday. I guess this is what Liverpool fans and Man United fans have had to deal with in the Europa League and whatnot. But we are sort of going to start looking ahead, I guess, soon to another match of football, which is a little bit crazy. But before we do, Alex, any other sort of major talking points from that Brighton game, because it is a bit of a sort of a whistle stop tour in terms of the performance itself, just because obviously the turnaround to Forest and what that sort of means. I felt like Brighton was a game where I expected City to get the job done. Forest was the one I'm looking at going, okay, that's a big, big test. But in terms of Brighton, I mean, Phil Foden, obviously sensational, but you and I and plenty of other contributors have said that numerous times already. Maybe Julian Alvarez, because he's had plenty of stick, but I thought it was a nut speaker of timely performances. A great one from him and a very deserved goal. You can see what it meant to him when it went in.
Yeah, I have, I think, just three more notes to add in here on this, and two of them are about Julian Alvarez. I think one of them is that, just as you said, this was a big game for him in terms of sort of like refinding his footing after, of course, he was in the squad when Kevin De Bruyne was injured. Kevin De Bruyne comes back, he gets pushed out, sent to the bench again, and comes in as a rotation option sporadically. And obviously, as a player, when you're playing, you know, once every 2 weeks at this point, it can just sort of destroy your rhythm in ways that, you know, can just put your game off, even if it's that little 5%. And I think for him to, first of all, to score that goal, which I believe is his first goal since early February, at least in the league, it's just must feel great for him. And on top of that, I do want to sort of give him his roses here, because I think throughout this season, something that most fans have been sort of annoyed with, and rightfully so in many ways, is his shifts in midfield and him being pushed into midfield and not being the best at it. And I think while in a vacuum, like individually speaking, those performances are sort of suboptimal, they are so incredibly important for his development as a player, where I think you start to see in matches like this that when he does start to play as a nine again, his ability to drop in and link up play is just on another level, where individually and also for what he offers to the team in terms of tactical value, from a year ago, it's, you know, a tremendous leap. And I think you expect that from any young player who's developing. But I think he's taken that extra step up because he had those opportunities and Pep put his trust in him. And just a little fact to add in that sort of underscores that, he had he completed 25 of his 28 passes today. And okay, some of them weren't technically that great, but 89% pass accuracy, which was actually the lowest of any of City's midfielders or attackers. And that's that kind of blows my mind, because typically you have, you know, either you're Kevin De Bruyne down in the 70s or someone on the pitch who's just taking down. And today it was pretty much everyone bar the two fullbacks who was in, you know, the high 80s and 90s in terms of pass completion. So that just goes to encapsulate how easy that performance was. So I wanted to say that about Julian Alvarez. And then just one more thing I want to add in here real quick as a little note, because I know you're quite hot on this guy as well, as Valentin Barco on Brighton, because we had been linked to him before. And I think there were some people who I really trust in terms of their sort of scouting value and how they sort of view players relative to City, and they were giving him all this praise, and I didn't really see him. And then he gets his first Premier League start, and of course he has the terrible mistake for our third goal, but he was a really, really good today. And I just want City fans to keep an eye on him in the future, because I think that he's someone who, and you can talk about the image with him and Pep afterwards, but I think he's someone that will be on City's shopping list in the near future.
Totally. I don't think it's a surprise that he came to the Premier League, and it was one of these sort of, maybe you could say it as a stepping stone move, because the guy's destined for the top. And it's interesting, FootMob have got him down as a 4.7 in terms of their match rating, which is, I know they do it on, you know, algorithms, and they'll look at sort of percentages and, you know, what he did create, what he didn't create, and obviously the mistakes, the goal is going to bring it down massively. But his movement off the ball was just like, wow. And the kids, he's still 19, isn't he? Yeah, still 19. Yeah. Jesus. I'm excited to watch him play. Hopefully he can get a bit more game time sort of going into next season. However, I do think there's maybe a conversation to be had about De Zerbi's tactics and style, but probably for a podcast that is not longer, a bit longer than this one. Ollie, let's sort of slowly turn our heads to Forest, because like I said, you know, as soon as this podcast goes out, we'll be what, 24, 48 hours away from that game itself. And the last real sort of squeeze, I guess, in terms of scheduling for City. So Guardiola will be pleased with that. But that, like I said before, Forest was the one for me from this week, which I'm looking at and going, okay, that's the big one. It sounds mental to say it, considering they're in a relegation battle and Brighton are still, well, maybe not so much now after that defeat, but they were before tonight, still in with a chance of European football. But we're at that time of the season, aren't we, where weirdly the harder games come against the teams who are further down the table.
Taking the words right out of my mouth. As soon as you said looking at Forest, that's exactly what I was thinking. But no, you're right. Forest are in a relegation battle. But then you look at our fixtures after that. Wolves, not much to play for. Fulham, not much to play for. Spurs probably will be pretty much cemented in their position by the time we get around to playing them. Same goes for West Ham as well, really. Forest, looking at this list of fixtures, may be the very last team whose heads are proverbially already on the beaches. It's a funny one.
Are there any beaches in Nottingham? There's a river, a Trent.
Are there any beaches?
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, if we kick them off the park hard enough, they'll end up floating down the Trent towards a beach. But no, you're right, though. You know, you look at the teams, Sheffield, not got them, Burnley, Luton, Everton. We've not got any of these sides. We've played them all. Looking at the top end of the table, Arsenal, Liverpool, obviously done, Villa done, Spurs the only ones. United are 7 points behind Spurs. Spurs have got a game in hand. They might still be battling for top four, so remains to be seen. But look, in the near future, the next 1-2 fixtures, yeah, Forest have got something to play for, and that's going to make a big difference at this point in the season.
Yeah, it certainly will. And Alex, the circus, the absolute shit show rolling into this game. I know a lot of our listeners are sort of City and then football, but for anyone who hasn't seen this absolute nonsense surrounding Forest, and take it back to last weekend when they put out what I dubbed a Goldbridge style conspiracy theorist rant about refereeing standards and the VAR man being a Luton fan, and you know, all sorts of just weird stuff. But it's rumbled over onto sort of throughout the week, and they'll be up for it. The crowd will be up for it. The City Ground is a pretty minging place to go. I'm already fretting a little bit about this fixture, I have to say.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a hostile environment, and pretty much I don't really have all that much to add in terms of what you both said. In terms of, first of all, the turnaround for us is short and there's travel involved, and that always puts a hamper on things a bit. And you know,
Arsenal playing before, which is interesting. It can work out either way, that can't it? They've got Tottenham Hotspur away. Say, for example, Arsenal drop points. Bloody hell, that's a motivate for City, isn't it? But Arsenal, I mean, it can't be the case now because City beat Brighton, but there was a situation where Arsenal could have been 7 points clear heading into that game.
Yeah, no, that's something that's, you know, really interesting to look at. It'll be interesting to know whether the players have an eye on that at all. I'm sure that they'll be trying to stay in their lane, but I'm sure that information will get to them one way or another. And one thing I do want to add with regards to Nottingham Forest is, yes, they are in a relegation battle. Yes, they're not safe yet. Yes, they do need to scrape and claw for every single point that they can get out of their remaining four games. But they still have to face Sheffield United away and Burnley away. So the flip side of that coin is they could be looking at this game just a week prior to playing Sheffield United and thinking, we don't really need to get any points here. Do we expect to get any points here? How much of a fight do we really want to put up? Do we want to wear ourselves out, or do we want to take a week off? I don't think that professional players will take a week off in football. But
it can play a part in it, though, can't it?
Yeah, exactly. I think if their remaining schedule was four of the top six, then they have to really go for every game. So that is just a factor to consider that, you know, plays into City's favor a bit. But no, I think to everything that you said, this is, in terms of the intangibles, this is probably the most, Spurs away has its own set of intangibles, but this is one of at least the two hardest remaining fixtures of the season in that regard.
Yeah. Yeah. Ollie?
I just wanted to mention something that I mentioned earlier when we were chatting about this privately, is that I think if we were ahead of Arsenal, they would be more likely to slip up. And I think as long as the schedule has us sat behind and chasing with our games in hand, that is going to spur Arsenal to win. It's frustrating. Last season, it wasn't until we went ahead of them outright that they really started collapsing in on themselves. And just the way that the fixtures are working out, I think it's another couple of weeks before, assuming both teams keep winning, we can actually go into top. So,
I'm pretty sure it'd be Fulham away would give us the chance to provisionally do that before they play United. But if Arsenal win the next two, City go into the final week of the season in second.
There you go. So the pressure is still absolutely on us, not Arsenal. Mm. We have to take every chance we can get, keep winning, and almost be patient in a sense. However, as you said, if Arsenal do drop points again and we can get ahead of them on the table with that game in hand, I think they may start to struggle. Because the psychological effects of a team being ahead of you and having a game in hand is completely different to having the opportunity to keep opening up space at the top, keep you opening up, and, you know,
can I share a really funny scenario that could play out? And it's unlikely because it would take quite a few bits and pieces to fall into place. But say Arsenal drop points away to Arsenal drop points away to Manchester United. City could then go and win the league title at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. So you'd have City's rivals almost gift wrapping the opportunity for City to win the title at Arsenal's rivals. I mean, that would be, Alex, that'd be, you know, chef's kiss.
Yeah, it would. I don't think you get any better than that at this point.
It's not getting ahead of ourselves.
Though. Yeah, that is no, certainly getting not, ahead of ourselves.
And that's coming from me, and I love getting ahead of myself. But, if
it comes true, then I'm going to have to clip this up in 3 weeks' time and say I told you so. But it's probably not.
I mean, if the title's still on the line by the time we go and play at Spurs, and Spurs aren't under pressure to secure a top four or top five place, then that'll be really interesting, because you're going to have 50, 55,000, however many the capacity is, fans in that stadium. Pretty much behind City. It might be like a bit of a Blackburn 2000, Ewood Park 2000 situation. I am just a bit frustrated with how the fixture scheduling has played out, because I do feel that if we get the chance, and this isn't saying we will at some point, it's just if we were given the chance to go ahead of Arsenal outright at the end of a weekend, then I'm not sure they'd be able to keep up their momentum. But for as long as we're behind them, I think we're going to keep pushing them and keep pushing them. And I think they're going to keep winning and keep winning. So pressure's on City at the moment. It really is. But if they give us the chance and we take it, I would be incredibly confident.
Yeah, that's the situation in terms of title race. Alex, just before we get out of here, been a bit of a haphazard episode. We're not usually this. If someone's tuning in for the first time, they'll be thinking, oh my God, what on earth is going on here? We're not usually this haphazard, but just a quick sort of what City might set up like against Forest, because we are in that part of the season where it doesn't necessarily feel like that side of things is all that important compared to the, you know, the feelings, the narratives, the situations, the schedules, etc., etc. But at the same time, I don't know if it's a case of just copy and pasting for City, the team that played against Brighton, because that was a very specific, fine-tuned setup that Brighton had, and Guardiola knew they were going to have. We're going to go up against the Nuno Espirito Santo team, which, you know, if you're talking about the footballing spectrum, you've got one side and in De Zerbi, and then the opposite side you've got someone like, you know, Espirito Santo.
Yeah, and it was something that Adam and Ollie discussed in yesterday's pod about whether there is just a first choice 11 for the remainder of the season and you follow through with that. And I don't think so, simply because we know Pep likes to change. It's not that there is just one set first choice 11. It's that for each individual game, there will be Pep's preferred 11, and those will not overlap and be the exact same from each game. There will probably be, you know, no two 11s that are the same throughout the remainder of the season. So I think in that case, we sort of have to always expect rotation. And then you sort of have to like put the pieces together once you see that lineup and make sense of what Pep has done. I think with regards to Forest, they will likely drop back into something that looks like a back five. They don't typically play with a back five specifically, but it will likely look like that. It will likely be 10 men behind the ball, maybe 11 men behind the ball. They'll probably have Morgan Gibbs-White as an outlet. And, you know, in terms of the attack, Jeremy Doku probably should start. That's a player where you look at, you know, okay, in a general sense, you probably want him coming off the bench, but in a game like this where the opposition is already penned back, he's someone that just gives you the extra dynamism. I mean, Kevin De Bruyne and Phil Foden should be there. Obviously, we don't necessarily know the situation regarding Erling Haaland's injury, which is rumored to be relatively minor. But again, the turnover from the Brighton game to Forest, who knows if he's going to be available for that. And then in defense, I mean, I would assume that with both Ruben and John Stones, it was sort of half arrest and half putting the faith in both Manuel Akanji and Nathan Ake for this one. I would assume that they both come in back into the lineup unless there is an issue there. And then I assume Yoshko Vardiol keeps his place. And I've pretty much just listed out almost the entire 11 sort of going through it. There really is just sort of one extra attacker slash midfielder alongside the names I already mentioned. And then one extra defender alongside Vardiol, Ruben, and Stones, ostensibly. So the 11 might pick itself for this one in that regard, but there's always that wiggle room for Pep in terms of one or two final spots to play around with.
Yeah, yeah, totally. I think Doku comes into this game, possibly Jack Grealish, Alvarez leading the line, I assume, considering Haaland would have, what, 1.5 days maybe to get fit, 2 days, Friday and Saturday, Ollie. Forest away. In terms of City setup, obviously we've done the sort of what it means and how City might go into it and what the results etc. might come up, but you have to fancy themselves, don't they, again going away to a team like Forest, even though we have said it will probably be City's hardest game in terms of an opponent with something to play for between now and United Cup final.
Forest will be fighting, the crowd will be behind them, it's a tough place to go, but ultimately Forest are fighting relegation, City are fighting for a fourth title in a row. The reason for that is that we are a far superior side. That doesn't
that's what the reason
always
was
count.
PGMOL. That's what Forest's admin said.
PGMOL, 115, FFP,
yeah.
Mark Goldbridge, ETR, all that. But no, it's ultimately, yes. Look, at this stage in a title race, you can't make excuses for failing to get any kind of result. I said this about Liverpool. Was it Liverpool or Arsenal at Old Trafford a couple of weeks back? Which one was it? Which one of them slips at Old Trafford? Not Liverpool in the Cup.
Liverpool in the league.
Was it Liverpool in the league?
Yeah, they drew. They went twice, didn't they?
Liverpool
2-2.
Yeah. So these are the kind of, you know, that's a very hard place for Liverpool to go because of the rivalry. But these things shouldn't matter in a title race. You have to win your games. It doesn't matter who you're against, whether you're home or away, whether it's Forest fighting relegation, whether it's a title rival in the last few weeks of the season, you have to win these games. There is absolutely no excuse. If you can't find a way and win these games, another team will, and they will go on and win the title. So yes, it is going to be hard, but this isn't a case of, you know, a fixture like this in mid-November, if you come away with a 1-1 draw, you're like, hey, look, it was a hard result. You know, Forest were scrappy, but it is what it is. We move forward. We've got the rest of the season to go. It's not like that now. There's no excuses. You have to go and get a result.
Yeah. A question before we get out of here. Alex, does the Premier League title race go to the final day? You don't have to say who wins it. You don't have to say who's lifting the trophy, what might happen, blah, blah. But 19th of May, I think it is, City, West Ham, Arsenal, Everton, Liverpool, Wolves, if they're still into it. Do you think it's decided on that day or potentially beforehand?
My money is yes, I think so.
Ollie?
No.
Interesting.
Opposite opinions here.
You want more?
Yeah. No, I don't. I'm happy with that. Happy with that.
I'm going to say no.
We've got a yes and we've got a no. Listeners, let me know. Let the podcast know. Let Ollie know. Let Alex know. Let your mum and dad know. Let your friends know. Let the next door neighbour know. If you think the Premier League title race will go to the end of the season. It's been a long week. It's starting to go a little bit delirious, which I think everyone can understand. It's why we're going to get out of here. So before I and the rest of the contributors start having a laughing fit, Alex, thank you.
Thanks for having me. Always a pleasure. Oh, God.
I'm losing it.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for having me. Have a great weekend, everyone.
Ollie, thank you.
Have a bang average weekend, Amos.
Oh, my God. I can't deal with this, man. It's like, you know, you have like a school teacher and you get to the end of the year and they just like start throwing out the DVDs and stuff like that. That's what it's like today. Absolute chaos. But listeners, thank you very much. Hopefully we'll be back with smiles on our faces. I do like it when we're in these sort of moods on Monday to review another Manchester City win. But until then, it's been a pleasure. We'll see you later. Make sure you're geared up for Man City's end of season running with McDelivery. Great food delivered right to your door. By using McDelivery, you won't miss a moment of City's crucial run-in, and just like Kevin De Bruyne, they deliver your order exactly where you want it. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. Are you in? At participating restaurants only, 18 and plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.